several sites can accommodate this project, different location, different pictures, in a way like the world of tourism, but also different locations, different pictures of the same location, as when the repetition of units in this project with windows at slightly different angles, different framings, when this cell becomes part of, or becomes a unit in this urban project for Rio de Janeiro, a project that, by the way, consists of a 6 kilometers strip of housing units under a highway on pilotis, under a highway on pilotis. Again, of course, here you have the idea of the movie screen, each of the frames coinciding with each one of these windows. Now, very quickly, I will move into a contemporary example to see how much this public domain has been, in a way, displaced indoors, and also perhaps to again insist on the idea that today, at least in architecture, the most radical statements about the condition of the public space are not being done with urban plans, are being done with work in the interior. That represents a significant transformation from other centuries. I think it's important to go back to Le Corbusier to realize that this is not something from yesterday, but in no other century, in no other time in history, has the house has so much in it. So, for example, Patricia Phillips puts it the following way. He says, just as the public space has become diminished as a civic site, the home has become in many senses a more public open forum. The public world comes into each house as it never had before through television, radio, and the personal computer, so that rituals that once were shared conspicuously in a group are now still shared, but in isolation. An example of this ambiguous condition is the annual celebration of the New Year's Eve in Times Square, for example, in New York, which is the more public event, the throng of people gathering in 42nd Street to watch a live Apple drop, or the millions of people at home watching this congregation on TV. Now, as I say, many contemporary architects are now addressing the issue of the transformation of the status of the interior. I will present here only one, perhaps two, if we have 5 minutes left. This is a 1987 room in the city, which was an exhibition that was organized by Susanna Torre in New York. And several projects were addressing, in the words of the curator, the self-conscious public character of private life by envisioning the room as a stage for the private performance of public rituals. But in this project, in Donna Robertson's project for this exhibition, this stage has been fully dematerialized, transformed, as you can see, into video screens circling around a single chair for the actor forever turned into an spectator. Now, the apartment, as you can see, is divided by this diagonal wall that somehow divides the space, glasses through that space. And on one hand, there is the dining room table, which is the traditional site of domesticity. And on the other one, the wall passes right through the facade of the building to support the satellite dish and the broadcast antenna. On the one side, the living area, there are 5 video monitors that are hooked to the satellite dish, which is placed outside of the window. This screen shows random images of the city. And this flickering light, of course, is reflected through a mirror, which is right here behind the chair, and then a different monitor, which is back through the window.
When you say this random image of the city, this comes from surveillance camera or
yeah.
From this kind of camera?
Yeah, on the one hand, it's completely hypothetical. There was just an installation, they never realized the project, but there were 2 things. On the one hand, there was the idea that, that there would be several channels of TV on, and they talk specifically about that reality of the transformation of, let's say, the planner view of the city of the 19th century in this other people kind of crossing through the tunnel. Right? But at the same time, they have also some idea about showing random images of the city from cameras that were installed outside. Where are we? On the other hand, as you can see, there is the sleeping and bathing areas. And again, here you have a television set, which, however, in this case, is not connected to the view. One small opening here replaces the original window. This is an existing apartment, and this is the model of the... You see here, the window on the left has been blocked, and there is a very small opening. The other window has been blocked by the satellite views. Now, both windows obviously have been compromised here. They are no longer for letting light in, but in a way to let light out, the light of the television. So the question is, what kind of light is this? And I think this probably in a way can be read in terms of what Virilio has called new forms of visibility. I think he writes that we are witnessing a new form of visibility. I think that electronic images are replacing the electrification of towns and of the countryside in the late 19th and early 20th century in a certain way. Automatic cameras and monitors are replacing street lights and neon lights in our town. When you move around a modern town, you notice that everything is concentrated into a video monitor, which is not only the video monitor of the police or the traffic circulation, but also the video monitor of the supermarket and the video monitor of the interactive blocks of flats in a closed circuit, etc. And here we are no longer concerned with an image at all in the representational, artistic, and illustrative meaning of the term. It is a question of another kind of light, an electronic lighting. And I think that one can no longer conceive of a space, whether it is living space, town space, or even the space of the entire territory, without this new lighting. This new lighting, which is produced by a desire for control, displaces traditional forms of enclosure. Let me show you a couple of slides. I wouldn't show any more projects because that will eat too much into our time for discussion. This is a couple of photographs from this and the next one from Len Jensel. What you see here is a security guard in the desert which is watching television. The television set has been placed in the trunk of his station wagon. No man's land here. There is no traditional enclosure. Only a car, precisely, a surrogate enclosure. See, precisely the car, you see, is not sitting in the car, but outside it, looking in. The television occupies the space. It is the only thing that here is comfortably placed. Its light passes out. The blue glow illuminates the man's face. He is, in fact, bathed in the light of this television. The security man finds security in the television. In a way, like he was warming himself up in the light of the electronic fire. But in so doing, he's also alienated the fact from traditional space. Now, I think I'm going to example to talk about the transformation of the public spaces with these two slides. But in a way, I could conclude in terms of, in the sense that the room in the city, this project of Rondona Robertson that I just saw, as I was saying here a minute ago, this planner perception of the 19th century city is understood to have been replaced by this cruising aimlessly through the television channel. The television is a window through which the spectacle of the city can be seen in a state of distraction. But this window is not only about receiving a view. The broadcast antenna alongside the satellite dish allows the house to broadcast also its intimacy. That was also part of the idea, that you could also broadcast what was happening in the house to the outside. I think this is interesting in an age in which the home video is no longer the video that is seen in the home, but also the video of the home that is seen in public. Television not only brings the public indoors, the front line into our living rooms, It also sends the private into the public domain. The various battle lines then are multiplied, disseminated, and used for the world that is domestic, that is the domestic, both occupies and is about that complex space. Of course, this question of bringing the front line to your front room, I take it from the period during the war in the Gulf, which was the slogan of CNN. The slogan of CNN is CNN brings you the front line into your front room, into your living room. Right? Now the living room into your living room, but the living room was used to call the front room. So you have now here the collapse of all this space between the front of your house and the front line, collapse in the space of that screen, in the space of that window of the television. All right, thanks.
Gracias.
I will have another session this afternoon during
5:30, okay?
Which will be improvised. I didn't know that I would have the privilege to present my work separately during this symposium. So I don't want to exhaust some topics at this point, but I would like to point out a few aspects, few issues that concern me, which are part of my work. In other words, through my artistic work, I'm asking myself many questions that are related to the very concept of operation of public space. And this public space, physical public space, in urban environment, being now extended through electronic media, in fact, has something to do with the symbolic public space, which is the central concept of democracy. The public space was created in the very moment of announcing the Grand Declaration of 1791, as communicated space, the space which should not belong to anyone. It should be open to everyone for free appropriation on condition that those who will be using it will respect the others who can give to this space a meaning. So it was a conditional public space, but it has also something to do with the First Amendment of the American Constitution, adopted in the same year. Such a public space overlaps with the physical public space, at least on paper, since the public spaces are administrated, not owned by anyone, but administrated in the name of public interest. Clearly, there are institutions, agencies that do it. They are based on elected and appointed officials. And they somehow decide what is considered to be public and what is considered to be private, as you pointed out. This is a major issue. Since to decide what is public, it means to exclude very often from the public space the issues which are considered private. The private issues might be the most important issues of our time. Not only domestic violence, as you mentioned, that might be more horrifying than violence in so-called public space, but also the experiences of those who have no voice in public space, who are excluded or in fact deported to public space, such as women, minorities, immigrants, all those who do not qualify as citizens, as those who are, let's say, are representing their proper private interests in public, meaning bourgeois interests that are being voiced in public space against the state to protect the individual property owners, in form of what was being called by Habermas public sphere. Well, this public sphere, of course, whether it really existed or not, it's a very interesting concept, but it's a concept which practically has nothing to do with the experience of most of the population of the cities. So, those points here are leading to very important recognition of equality of political rights, at least hypothetical, and inequality of ethical obligations. If those who have access to public space are officially recognized as proper citizens, polities, are there to speak, for example, public artists or public designers, then the question is, what is their position in relation to all of those who cannot speak? Which brings, yes, of course, democracy is an impossible project. It will never end, as it was pointed out here. It is a daily struggle to assert the rights by exercising communicated rights and speak. Without speaking, expressing, communicating, disrupting the continuity of what is considered public, the democracy will die. But what if there are people who cannot even try to do so? Because they don't know the language, because they have no papers, because they are undocumented illegal aliens, because they are women or children or people who are not fully able physically, or all of those excluded, and all of those who feel historically excluded, not only in contemporary work. Those who are carrying the history of the vanquished, as Walter Benjamin would say, those oppressed versus the oppressors, those who are watching the monuments to the victors, monuments that barricade public space historically, that in fact mentally barricade the space to the point that in our internal world, our subjectivity is being dominated and constructed by the very presence of those monuments to the victors. Should by those who are the vanquished or the oppressed be able to project their histories and experiences against the monuments of the victors? Shouldn't they be able to recall the history of their oppression and project it on the glorious petrified environment of the official history in order to insert, inscribe their history into grand national narrative? That's easy to say. On paper, it should be possible, but since we artists, however marginalized we might feel, in the moment of having an opportunity to display, express, perform, design our aesthetic work, it brings an obligation, ethical obligation, towards the other, the silent other, and towards the third, the others, not only the other, the society at large, and public space itself, which must be protected here as a concept, as the very essence, so not the essential, as the very principle of democracy. So, to recognize the other, to not to speak for the other, but to recognize the impossibility of speaking for the other, at the same time create the conditions for the other to speak, and at the same time to take responsibility for the other and for the others who might not understand those silent, infantilized, excluded voices, seem to be one of the important ethical obligations of public artists and public designers in public space, in order to protect, perpetuate, but in fact produce on a daily basis what is this unfinished and impossible project called democracy. My own work is definitely a very modest contribution to this discourse. It is very easy to point out those things. It's very difficult to practice. But I would like to show a few images so you recapitulate the type of projects that I developed over the period of the past 25 years. I selected 11 slides, so the sketch. Just to revive the effigy of the past, the doesn't want to be in focus. It certainly belongs to the previous epoch. I am myself a kind of monument, since I belong to this political, I grew up in the political system that no longer exists, called, state socialism. This work, produced in 1971-72, is a vehicle, I would which was designed for my own use, but here I was in fact representing the situation of an intellectual, an artist in Poland. The very fact that I tried to even use public space, physical public space, to propose artistic project was already very strange. And I was carrying a letter in my pocket from authorities saying that this is to testify that artist Krzysztof Wodiczko is presently experimenting his mobile sculpture. And everyone it was to whom may concern, which means police. Everyone is requested to help him in this very ambitious undertaking. What it was is simply a translation of my own situation, my colleagues in a public space, in as those who were walking back and forth in a very reflective philosophical motion. And this, as long as we were walking back and forth and reflecting on some serious matters, elevated and isolated on our platforms, the platform was moving ahead, because the movement, two-directional movement of my walking back and forth was translated into the progressive motion of the vehicle through the system of cables and gears, like a tilting platform. Such was the situation of the kind of amount of freedom and democracy that we had in 1970s in Poland. As long as we were working on our artistic project and our abstract philosophical issues, the progress was guaranteed automatically, whether we like it or not. The situation in so-called West at that time was different. It was a different level of unfreedom. It was definitely possible to do more than simply translate the absurd situation in which artists and intellectuals operated. So I recognized, once I arrived to this free and democratic West, that people also have the freedom to die of homelessness, of starvation, from state socialism to jungle capitalism, the monument to democracy, to civil war, the heroes who died in defense of the Constitution, that includes also all of the rights, fundamental rights, communicative rights, on those steps of those monuments, homeless people were living. If only those monuments could see what was happening in front of their, on the steps of those monuments, they would probably die again. They would turn their blind eyes on the fact, on the very life or inhabitation of this moment. So the contradiction between the life of historical monuments, the history of the victors, the glorious petrified environment of democracy, and the actual life that was inhabiting the monument, that contradiction was the contradiction of historical monuments inhabited by new monuments, the homeless. Projecting this contradiction, juxtaposing those two things was definitely an attempt to disrupt the continuity of passive reading of this environment of official history. I will discuss some other details. Another case was the projection of so-called Polish shopper, the object of paranoid gaze of East and West Berliners who couldn't take those strangers penetrating the glorious city in search for cheap electronic equipment so they could sell them in Warsaw to Russians in exchange for some other goods. This Polish shopper, born of the ruins of Leninism, was projected with all of its goods, so familiar to Berliners, and the monument to Lenin. And this is the first time I was threatened by the inhabitants of the area surrounding the monument who wanted to kill me. Those were the desperate last contingent of Leninists who thought that a monument belongs to them. But it is in fact their private monument, since it is their idol, it is their shrine. They did not recognize the fact. In fact, I received permission from the city hall of East Berlin to do this projection as maybe one of the first acts of democratic administration of public space. Another monumental project which somehow wants to create the problematic point which would be point of convergence or crossing of variety of inquiries about the condition of homelessness in New York through articulated through design object as a kind of projection of architecture, newly designed architecture against the existing architecture. The architectural design born of actual life of those who are living, born of the city, city as a result of its transformation. The new strange nomads that are born of the city. There was never such a phenomenon before. Nomads were usually coming from the outside of the city. Those are the nomads who know better what city is. For they are born of the city, and the transformation of the city becomes the transformation of the life. They are carriers of the history, of different kind of even knowledge. That once they are exposed as legitimate operators, they might be asked questions. They are recognized as serious partners for the first time, for they are operating equipment specifically designed for them. The kind of extension of this project was my attempt to create communication vehicles that would somehow employ an enormous amount of information access to the city under the city in transformation, the access that homeless somehow groups had. This communication vehicle did not really materialize the same degree as the first one. It was an interesting puzzle, important definition for the vehicle different variants. This is the driving. Because it led to the last project that I want to present here, the Alien Star, which is Baton d'Etranger of Xenobacul, or Xenobaculo, or Las Patuacha, is a Polish name for it. The project that truly is a born of my own criticism of previous projects. It's not only that it's new in terms of addressing the situation of the new strangers. There's about 60 to 65 million of refugees today on this planet. And the number is growing. That's according to United Nations estimates. They are, they seem to be a phenomenon which is puzzling most of the intellectuals today, and probably more and more artists and designers. What is the position of aesthetic practice in relation to the kind of art and misery of survival of those who are in transit? Artists were claiming, at least in its avant-garde history, a special affinity towards the strangers and displaced, misfortune and dispossessed. Maybe this is the first time in the history, probably avant-garde is no longer here, but maybe it still circulates to some degree in our veins. And at least its ethics and its openness towards the stranger and its history of own displacement. Perhaps it's the first time that we have an opportunity to do something, or we have maybe no choice, but we must try to do something surrounded by those artists in survival. Strangers, many of whom are double or triple strangers, as they are minorities within minorities. There are women immigrants who are, then by principle, already double immigrants. Those stories and must be told in the space, public space, which is dominated by official narrative and official history. New history of experience must be inscribed into official history of each country or each place. But also the experience must be recognized by the very strangers, strangers who must accept and explore the complexity and multiplicity of identities through which they live. Therefore, the project that I am proposing is not only political, social, or ethical, but also psychological and has psychotherapeutical dimension for the operators themselves, who, when they record their own story for the first time, translating impossible experiences, horrifying, painful moments, and transform it into jokes, stories, into comedy, into gestures, and then continue this with the others, in front of the others, spreading, disseminating, in fact, this new discourse, sharing the secrets. And in fact, perhaps through this artifice that is between them and the others, around this artifice, they might maybe open up the possibility of new community on a micro level around this alien star, the community of openings, of sharing, of all of those experiences that are strange, for which there is no room in official media, even in newspapers, including even those who claim to be witnessing the problem, such as Liberation, But if you read those newspapers, you only see and then speak to strangers and immigrants, you see discrepancy, unbelievable discrepancy between the official image of those committed journalists who are speaking for the strangers and the actual stories and cases and choices, ethical choices, which demand perhaps more than just this project. Maybe this situation demands the new digital network which would operate as a new Talmud, as a new Talmud for those who are who must continue their ethics under the conditions of displacement. And in the afternoon I will show the videotape that was produced in Paris. There is one of the participants here in this conference or symposium, Gilles Papier. Might add some of his own comments, since he was involved in many aspects of the production. This is Patrika Irenda, an immigrant from Italy, the most privileged kind of immigrant you can imagine, who, however, went through horror in this very civilized environment of Paris. And Ambroise Walking of Haiti, who is here addressing himself, opening himself to the other, to the stranger, a French intellectual on the left. Thank you for your attention, and I hope we can continue the discussion now and also later in the afternoon.
So, si. Se ha planteado la posibilidad de hacer una pequeña pausa. No sé si. Yo creo que es mejor continuar ahora con el calor del. Buenas noches, exacto. Vamos a poco a poco a recentrar el yo creo que hemos tenido una vamos a ir poco a poco hacia una discusión un diálogo entre las personas en la mesa y también entre nosotros. Yo creo que hemos tenido tres puntos de vista muy ricos y muy complementarios entre sí, desde la experiencia de cada uno de los
experiencia profesional de cada uno de los intervinientes. A mí me gustaría destacar algunas
de las ideas que me han parecido más significativas, que no quiere decir que sean quizás las más fuertes, pero son únicamente orientativas y pueden dar lugar a empezar esta discusión. Sobre todo una que ha avanzado Alain Saab sobre la una cuestión que concierne a los materiales y al soporte del arte público, porque creo que estamos viviendo, y sobre todo a partir del caso francés que bien nos ha explicado Alain, una vuelta a un nuevo monumentalismo que lo veo como bastante problemático. Es decir, la necesidad del poder público, ya sea estatal o local, de presentarse y representarse en el espacio público, junto con la alianza del arte, digamos que ha encontrado en la alianza con el arte un camino extraordinario para darse, para existir. Por otra parte, creo que hay una contradicción entre el arte contemporáneo o los temas, las ideas vehiculadas a través de la práctica artística contemporánea y la monumentalidad tal como la hemos heredado del siglo XIX. Es el problema de la temporalidad y de la permanencia. O sea, ¿quién se atreve hoy en día a hacer monumentos o a fabricar monumentos y a jugar el juego del lenguaje de lo que el monumento significa? El proyecto del cual nos hablaba Alain, que era inacabable, inacabado, sin fin, me parece en este punto de vista importante. El mismo poder, el mismo...